guys. Welcome to Man Strong Podcast. This is your host, Clint Locklear. And we are going to be talking about a few different subjects today about being a man, not being ashamed of being a man. And sometimes being a man is not the most civilized thing in the world if you're looking at certain situations. And that's how it should be. Now, before we go any further, I want to thank our sponsor, which is an awesome sponsor, Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. They're out of Iowa. If you're into trapping, if you're into predator calls, outdoor type stuff, they have you covered, and they have great prices, and they're at amazing shipping. They're such good shippers now that I've actually hired them to ship all my product out for me just because they're better and more efficient than I was. So that lets you know the level of trust I have in them. And if that's something you're looking for, is good quality people with good quality equipment, good quality shipping, give Funky Trap Tags and Supply a chance. You will not be disappointed. Now, I want to say a few things before I get into this subject, because we're talking about something that, I'll be honest with you, I don't quite understand. I don't quite pretend like I understand what other people go through when they're looking for a self-identity type thing. But that's not really the point of what it is. This is not a pro-transgendered or a negative transgendered subject. Now, if you're pro-transgendered and you think the world should all be transgendered, you're not going to like what I'm getting ready to say. But, like I said, I have no idea. I don't know what it's like to be gay. I just know there's gay people. Then there's happy gay people and there's sad gay people. And they seem to be just people. You know, I happen to like women. They like men if they're a male, or I can understand it why if they're a female, they'd like a female. They look prettier and they smell better than we do. But if I don't understand what would make a guy be attracted to another guy. It's just, I don't get it personally. Just like they don't get why I'm attracted to women. Don't get it, but, you know, to each his own. We live in a free country. If that's your thing and you're not hurting anybody and everybody's on consent, you know, that's part of being a free country. Now, in the last couple of years, we all know the big T, the transgendered, they've come out swinging baseball bats with spikes on the ends, trying to get everybody to be not just, you know, okay, you want to be transgendered. No, that's not good enough. You've got to be pro-transgendered. And if it's an adult, I don't care. I mean, I really don't care. If a dude wants to be a girl, a girl wants to be a dude, and that's their thing, I don't care. It does not involve me at all. It's a personal thing that may have consequences for those people that really do not bother me. I do not look at the world through the eyes of a Puritan, because I know what Americans are in private, and we're pretty much all perverts in private. That's just a fact. All the other countries in the world know that except for us. Puritans on the outside, perverts in public. And human beings have been that way forever. But I want to talk about a couple of things with transgendered, which it from a guy's point of view, from a dad's point of view, from a man's point of view, looking at it from a different perspective. Now, me and my wife enjoy watching a show called The Voice. And we normally don't watch the whole show, but when they have these things called blinds, if you've never seen it, there's four judges. They're very famous. They've got their back to the artist. You can't see what they look like. And you really get surprised sometimes what you think, because sometimes they don't show it to the TV. And you're saying, okay, that's a black guy, that's an older white guy, that looks like CCR singing that, you know, and, you know, it looks like completely opposite of what it is. But what it does is it teaches you, it's hard to judge somebody if you can't see them, but you can just see the talent. And to me, that's a pretty neat thing. But a couple of years ago on the blinds, they started letting have duets, like twin sisters and twin brothers and stuff like that on there. And they never really go that far. I don't know why. Some of them are actually pretty neat. Some are just okay. Well, this year, they have a transgendered, I mean, we're talking like 15, 14, 16-year-old girl and her brother, which is a transgendered him from a her. So it used to be a girl, now it's a him. So whatever, just say guy. So there's a guy there who's transgendered from a girl. And she's on, or he's on, hormone treatments. You know, at least this isn't a small kid. Now, if anybody's been around a 14 or 16-year-old long enough, you know, they've got about the brain capacity of maybe a really good, you know, Austin Healer dog. They're like rabbit, you know, they just see the rabbit and chase it. They're really into what other people think about them. They have not grown up yet. They believe a lot of what adults seem as very strange and immature things. But at least when this guy from a girl turned into a guy, she was at least, you know, not a small child. But I'm watching this, and because the transgendered boy is on hormones, his voice is cracking. Now, this, the show of The Voice has amazing talent. It really does. If you like music, you would probably enjoy a lot of this. And the coaches are funny and stuff like that. But everybody is trying to go out of their way to have sympathy for the transgendered boy because his voice is cracking on a show that's about the voice, not about if you're straight or gay or transgender, not about if you're fat or skinny or beautiful or ugly. It's about the voice. It's a competition. There's a lot of money online. There's a lot of future money as far as contracts and different stuff like that. It's a serious high-end competition. Now, see, from a guy's point of view, and if people actually understood what competition was anymore, okay, if you're going through the hormone treatments and your voice is cracking and you can't really sing loud because it breaks all to pieces, this is not the competition for you. See, the participant in competition has to match the competition and either beat the competition or lose to the competition. Competitive anything is pretty straightforward. Bring what you got and hope you brought enough. That's the way drag racing used to be. That's the way, you know, if you're going to be a quarterback in the NFL, yeah, you're going to get your bell rung. You know, they're starting to change that around for safety reasons. It could be a good thing. I think they're going overboard, but it could be. Yeah, I can understand how people want people to get hurt. But it's a competitive thing against a defense and an offense. The singing competition, all the judges are saying, well, if the voice wasn't cracking, I know that's a powerful person under there that's going to do good. And they keep kind of bringing them forward. Now, they did let them go this last time on the show. But to me, it was just weird. And probably the most uncompetitive thing is to let someone go through a voice competition without that. See, competition is an amazing thing that human beings need. Males need it way more than I believe females need it. Males have to have competition, or you're going to have a broke entity, because that's in the hardwiring of the DNA of every male. Now, moms hate competition a lot of times. Not all moms, but modern moms sure do. Because competition shows the participant that they're not always the most badass thing walking the face of the earth. It shows a pecking order in life. It can be through drive or talent or practice, but the one that's the best wins. It's pretty simple. Being competitive from a feminist point of view is a negative. How do you sharpen steel into a sword without competition? You can't. How does a young man or a grown man have very much sense of purpose with anything unless there is competition involved? I don't think there is. Businesses are very competitive no matter what the young people of America thinks it should or shouldn't be. That's why a lot of the millennials, when they get out of college, they're going to feel like the world has kicked them right between the legs and knocked their teeth out with a baseball bat. Because they've been trained to think competitive processes are bad. And they're not. They're really quite awesome. Football, if you've ever looked at the history of football, came about with the military and Ivy League schools because they knew that men needed to be hard and they knew that men needed to be competitive. But it was a little too dangerous to practice live combat with live bullets after the Civil War. So they came up with this concept of football, where it's basically chess on a field with live bodies and violence, which is pretty much what combat is. And it's morphed into what it is today. See, people used to understand how important competitive things were for people that were going to be in charge of anything else. Because everything in life is competitive. Your job is competitive. Everything you buy is based off competition. Everything you do is based off competition. Sales are about competition. Advertising's about competition. Marketing, branding, messaging, all that's about competition. If you're a hunter, yes, it's competitive. If you're trapping, it's very competitive. It can be with nature, it can be with other trappers, it can be with other hunters, it can be anything. But what it does is it teaches, in my opinion, that just because you want something is irrelevant. You have to be willing to work at it. And when you have competitive, competitive practices like it's taught today, where everybody gets a trophy, nobody keeps score, if no one understands how this works. Now, see, in the business world, I'm going to give you a real world example that is very obvious in the little small town where I live in Dunlap, Tennessee. I go to a gym called The Body Shop. It's the only gym here. Is it like the best gym? No. We're in a very small rural community. There's, you know, someone probably dropped $100,000 on equipment, plus they rent buildings and they have employees and they put in saunas and now they're getting massage stuff and all this type stuff. More than they probably needed, but they were trying to make sure the customer was happy. Well, about a week ago or 10 days ago, another gym moved to Dunlap. Now see, now there's two gyms in a very small market with very limited people that actually care if they're strong and nimble and physically fit or anything like that. That's the reality living in a rural area. Biscuits and gravy, Trump, deadlifts, all the time. Well, I've got to know the owner of the body shop, which is the small gym I go to, Richard. And I've went in and I went did things like, dude, if I buy some specialty bars, can I have them if I ever leave? And he's like, what are they? He saw what they were. He bought them for the gym, wouldn't let me pay for them. Really good guy. Well, now this new gym opens. The other gym is bigger, just the square footage. And they brought in newer machines. So now we've got two gyms that are competing. This is real world, not fictional. So the new gym come in, went and looked at the old gym, I guarantee it. And they go, we need to be better than the old gym. That's what they've done. Now the new gym is threatened. Who won in the competition so far? Especially if you look at this from a capitalistic point of view, the customer did. Because if you want more machines with more area and more classes and all this other stuff they're doing, you're going to go to the new gym and leave the old gym. But the customer wins. Now the new gym is getting rid of old equipment and bringing in new equipment and bringing in some type of, that he's all excited about. I don't know what it is, but it's like a, you lay down in water and somehow it massages you or something like that. He's all, extremely expensive piece of equipment. Now the customers that stay at the body shop, which is the old gym, are also going to be the winners, because the competitive part of being a gym owner in a small rural town is there's not many customers and you dang well better be the best. So customers are winning both ways. Whichever gym survives in the long run, the customers still win. But Richard, because I got to talking with him the other day, because I'm actually going to buy some of the equipment he's getting rid of. And I said, are you getting new equipment because the new guys down the street got your competitive hackles up? And he just looked at me and with this like almost like a grin and said, yep, shaking his head up and down. He's ready to compete. Super important lesson he's learned in his life, or his option is to tuck his tail between his legs and get run over by someone else who's ready to compete. See, that's real world. That's what your kids and that's what adults need to understand. Competition happens every day in every business. You're either going forward or backwards. There is no middle ground. You either get your butt kicked or you're kicking butt. That's just a fact of life, no matter how much socialists and communists want to think otherwise. The reason socialism and communism always ends up in starvation and mass death is because they try to take the competition out of the market. And eventually, people can't get clothes, shoes, medicine, and food. And then there's a great big revolution or there's a big genocide that happens in that country, kind of like Venezuela is right now. Without competition, everybody suffers. Kind of like the survival of the fittest, I guess. But in The Voice, because the transgendered boy is transgendered, and the way that we are as a society today, where it's not so much pure competition anymore as it is the story and all that other stuff, they got to go a lot farther in the contest, which means someone that was better than them didn't get to. Which is also why lack of competition sucks. Now this other thing. Right now, down in Texas, there is a little boy whose mom and dad has been divorced. And I don't know the mom's motivation, and I'm not going to pretend to. I do understand the dad's motivation. The boy is 7 years old. He does not consider himself a girl. If you do any research into this, this is not a confused kid that doesn't know whether he is a boy or a girl. Does not associate with being a girl in any stretch of the imagination. Mom does. Why? Could be revenge against the dad because she knows he's going to go crazy over this, which so far he has. But you really don't know what her motivation is. Maybe she truly believes it. I have a feeling it's because women are now trained to be afraid of anything masculine. They think it's bad and they think it needs to be changed and fixed. But I don't know. That's just a hunch that I have. the dad found out from the boy that mom's trying to make him into a girl, and the dad threw a hissy fit. This is now national news. The dad starts speaking out. People start realizing how crazy this is, which goes against the transgendered agenda, because it's got to be just as right as rain for everybody that's trans. That everybody needs to be super pro transgendered. That it's caused a circus of tribes, pro and anti-transgendered. The mom wants to start hormone treatment, either because she thinks she needs to fix the masculine characteristics of a boy, or to get back at the dad. But either way, the little boy that's 7 years old is about to get chemically and physically, genitally mutilated. What is the response from the dad? There's been hinting around from language from him that he's, I'm sure, thinking about going and snatching the kid. Now, by the laws of the land and the divorce proceedings from a judge, he does not have the legal right to do so. Once all of the transgender stuff came out and the boy doesn't want to be a girl, but mom's going to force him to be a girl and start taking hormones, which is going to screw the poor kid up for life, and she's probably going to get his nuts cut off and his penis cut off and try to put a vagina where a penis used to be, the dad's like, no, that's not happening. And the more the dad came out in public, now there's a gag order against the dad to speak out about this. See, he already knows he's lost this in the courts by what's going on. He knows that the mob is coming for him. Not justice, not realistic hope, but the mob. And the victim of this is his little boy. The dad's really not the victim. Even though I think he will end up a victim, the victim is a little boy. Should the dad go snatch the kid and maybe end up in South America? I mean, you definitely don't want to go to Canada. Maybe Southeast Asia. Japan. Somewhere. Should the dad break the law to save his son from being chemically and physically mutilated? Now, the interesting thing to this to me is that there are men today that would go, well, you've got to follow the law. If that is what the law is, no thank you. No thank you. That means it's really not the law. There's no justice involved. Now it's a propaganda arm of the transgender community. And most of us know that the courts are propaganda arms for the very progressive left in this country. But when it's one man with one son with a mom that wants to force him to be a girl, that'll probably end up at best him being gay when he wasn't gonna be, just because now he don't know what to do and he's gonna have urges, or he's going to probably end up committing suicide the way so many of the transgender people do after they have these surgeries. So the dad is looking at this, I'm sure, from a point of view of, if I don't do anything, my son is lost. I think the dad should do what is ever necessary to protect his son, regardless of what a liberal judge or a liberal lawyer or a liberal mob says to do. But see, you can't do that unless you're a sword. And without competition, you're never going to be a sword. Because if the man takes the son to save his son, he's going to be in competition for the rest of his life to stay out of prison. Most of y'all have heard of Ben Shapiro. He's a little bitty guy. He looks like he's like 5 foot five. I could probably put him in my back pocket and sneak him through TSA. He's a little bitty dude. He's a conservative talk radio guy. He's a hardcore Jewish, serious Jewish type person. And Beto, which is now running for president, was saying that, you know, if parents don't almost force the liking of gay and transgendered on the children, the parents should lose the children. And Shapiro, which is, like I said, a little bitty guy, basically said in a tweet that if you come to try to force that on my children, I will meet you at the door with an AR-15 or a gun. I think it was a gun. I'm not sure if it said AR-15. The liberals went ballistic. Is what Shapiro said right? I don't know if saying it's right, but doing it sure as the hell is. See, but that's going to take a man, a mature male, that understands the consequences of competition to be able to stand up and do what he needs to do to be a man. Because there will be no participation trophies given out for this competition. That's why competition is so important. If you lose a basketball game, you don't really, it's not like it's a life-changing thing. When I was in high school, the teams that I played basketball for, we went to state 3 times and we never won state. It hurt. It was frustrating. You know that you could have won, but you didn't. The other team had more talent. They were better prepared. They were more motivated. Whatever it is, I don't even remember really anymore at 50 years old. But it seemed like it was life and death at the time, and it really wasn't. But in life, some of the competitions pretty much are. If somebody kicks in your door to cause harm to your family, that is a competition that will probably last about 5 to 10 seconds. Only someone that understands competition has a chance to survive that. I guarantee you the criminal does. I was just talking with a relative of mine last night and guns came up. He's got a deer rifle because he does like to go deer hunting. And he's got a pistol and we were looking at some. And he goes, I just don't really think I need one of these for self-defense. And I said, I just said his name and I'm like, you know what? I'm glad in a way that you think that way. That means the violence of the world has never laid hands on you or you've never seen it. But I said his name again, but that doesn't mean that it's not real. And it seems to me, being a man today is going to get ratcheted up to the competitions of manhood. Just keeping your manhood is going to get more serious and more dire all the time. So when I talk about being physically and mentally strong, that's why. When I talk about being physically nimble, that's why. having a handgun and shooting it once a year is not training to win a competition. Because you're probably not going to win that competition. Your adrenaline's going to be up. You're going to be out of breath. It's never going to happen the way you think it is. It's never going to be in the situation that you think it is. And your brain is not going to want to believe that it's happening to you. Now, I will admit that I look at this a little bit different. Being in the military, being a combat veteran, being classified by the government as PTSD, I see threats a lot different because of the PTSD than most folks do. But you know what? That doesn't make the people without PTSD in any less of a danger. Because I understand the competition between bad guys and good guys. And I understand that it's not a video game that you're not going to be able to just turn off and restart. Serious consequences that I understand from competition. That's why competition should be part of some form of everything that men do. And more importantly, it needs to be, real competition needs to be part of what young men learn. Just think about this. If you have children and you watch how the world wants you to treat them. Those without competitive spirits are basically victims, and their parents are helping them to become victims, regardless if they understand that or not. I think it's part of a man's job to never be a victim and not train his children to be a victim. You're going to have to figure out how you do that. See, the dad's job, after the mother raises the child, usually in the teenage years, the mom does not have the same rapport with a child as she did younger. If she does, the kid is messed up. And the dad is messed up for letting it happen. She is there to raise and nurture. As a man, your job is to train. And I don't mean like a Spartan or a Navy SEAL or something like that. But your job is to train that child to be able to handle the world that it's going into. And if you don't do it, shame on you.